Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, we're on another show, and the topic of this show, again, is healing and curing. This topic was brought up to me by a lot of the listeners who requested or asked about what is the role of Reiki in healing, and why doesn't Reiki work all the time? Do we treat one person and they seem to have a miraculous recovery and another person doesn't and seems to do nothing? Or are there times when Reiki doesn't work? And what is curing? And does Reiki ever cure anybody? Can you cure diabetes with Reiki? Can you reverse eyesight loss or hearing loss? So all of these stories are really interesting because in my experience, there's for every story that Reiki has had done a miracle, there's another story where it hasn't seemed to work. And in my classes, I always find that the stories actually about things that don't seem to have worked with Reiki are the most interesting. They're a little bit like a detective story, where you have to like search because the healing isn't quite as obvious as the others. And it doesn't mean that it's better or worse, it's just not as obvious. So we have to kind of look for it where it's unexpected. And this gives us a sense that our human beingness, as I call it, is very complicated and at the same time very simple because it's very interconnected. And I think that when we search into this concept of healing and of curing, we find that the way that the human being is approached makes a lot of difference in whether or not people or a person can identify healing or curing. Today I have with me Tripuri Dunn, and she's from the UK. And Tripuri, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Yeah. Tripuri, what an interesting name.
Yes, it is indeed. It's a name that I got many years ago from my meditation master.
Uh-huh, beautiful. And does it have a meaning? I'm just being nosy now.
No, absolutely, it does. It actually means three realms. And on one level, it reflects three realms of consciousness.
Ah, Tripuri. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Fascinating. So can you share your Reiki story? That's where we always start.
Yes, I'd love to. My Reiki story actually started in India.
Uh-huh.
I was involved in a very nasty car crash in 1979. And as a result of that, I had some injuries which affected my coordination.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other difficult stuff was going on in my life. Everything was falling apart. And a very good friend of mine, who had met a very famous Indian guru called Baba Muktananda, said, "You should go to Ganesh Puri. Take time out. Get well." So that's what I did, because I really, you know, it was very good for me to go there and take time out and do some Iyengar yoga and really start to find ways of healing myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while I was in the ashram, I met my master, my Reiki master, Krishan Borang. And Krishni noticed that Reiki would do me some good, so she gave me some treatments. And at that time, there were quite a few other Reiki practitioners there. And so I got quite a lot of Reiki.
Wonderful.
And I think my favorite treatment was under the stars, beneath the banyan tree, and that possibly was my point of no return.
Uh-huh. That sounds gorgeous. What year was this?
This would have been round about 1984.
So just before he died?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting.
Now, he died in 1982, and I was in the ashram just after that period, That would have been in 84 that I started having Reiki.
Because I know that I was with Wanya when he died.
Oh, right.
And she went back. We were teaching a class when she found out in Seattle. And she went directly back to India. But
that's
I didn't.
Right.
I knew it was in the beginning of the 1980s, but I didn't know when.
Yes, that was in 82, and that's how she came to teach Krishni Reiki, because he gave her permission to do that.
Uh-huh.
Bless them, too. Because Krishni is, you know, she's famous for the story of the deer.
Yes.
She used to look after the deer, and she was very distressed because they were dying of foot and mouth. And that's how Vanya came to introduce Reiki to the ashram. Yeah.
Beautiful story. Wonderful. So you received Reiki treatments? And
I received Reiki treatments combined with the other things that I was doing, including yoga. And gradually my coordination got better. It's still not perfect, but it's manageable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so where did you take your first degree then?
I actually took my first degree back in London. I came to England for a trip to London. Krishni was there. And she just said, you should do your first degree. You can self-treat then. So I did. And then within a short time before she went back to India, she also gave me a second degree.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. And how did you find that?
My secondary degree story is quite funny, actually. I'm a bit ashamed of this, but she told me about it fairly soon, within a few months of doing first degree.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, the fee, to me at least, seemed quite a lot.
Well, it's supposed to seem quite a lot.
Yeah, I wasn't quite ready for it. I was still on Indian money.
Ah, well, that's a big difference.
Yeah. And so when I had to get there, I had a lot of money issues. I had to do a lot of running around to try and sort it out. And it brought up a lot of resentment about time spans. And you know.
Uh-huh.
But she was my teacher, so I had to do it. That's how I felt. And when I actually got to the class, there was this most wonderful group of people, people who had come from Findorn, who had come from Holland. And I just realized she'd wanted to give me a gift of meeting people who were really inspiring, really amazing.
Wonderful.
So it was the most brilliant class.
Wonderful.
But I, you know, I had to go through my stuff first.
Yeah, well, that's part of the process.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. So how did you come to your path as a master?
Ah, that was quite unexpected. A year or so later, Krishni was back in London. And she said to me, are you using your Reiki? And I said, yes, a lot of your people are coming to me, because she was away. So they came to me for Reiki. And she said, yes, I've heard that. So are you going to go on with your Reiki? And I said, well, yes. And she said, I think you should do more.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she started sending more people to me, and eventually it got so that I found it a bit too much to do at home. So I took a room in a clinic near where I lived, and they started referring people to me as well. And almost by default, I had a Reiki practice.
Uh-huh.
And obviously I learned quite a lot just through treating people. It's quite tough, actually, to begin with, because I was treating three or four people, maybe more a day. And Krishni said very casually to me one day, you could teach this. And I kind of looked at her and she said, oh, don't worry. I know you haven't got the money, but you could teach this. Just keep doing what you're doing. And gradually, over the next 4 or 5 years, with interaction with her, working in clinics, I learned quite a lot about Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And then she just sort of said, so do you want to do this? And I said, yes, okay. and, you know, for a while it was absolutely great. And then I came up against me again. And what was happening then, we were in the early 90s now. A lot of people were practicing different forms of Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And so people were coming into the clinic where I had worked for years, and maybe they'd done a weekend course, and suddenly they were able to teach and I wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And that brought up a lot of stuff for me. So I I went to Krishni and sort of said, oh, I'm not happy about this and whatever. And it seemed like she was blocking me and that it wasn't the right time for me to complete my mastery process. And one day I just got really cross. So I spoke to her and she said, I'm just waiting for you to get the money together. And I sort of stormed out and said, well, that's the problem. I can resolve that. And so I did. And she said, so when do you want your initiation? And I said, well, it would be lovely on my birthday, which was coming up. So That's what we did.
Wonderful.
Yeah. But every time Reiki has always pushed me to where I have to do something or really, And I'm not very good at confrontation, so I've really noticed how Reiki will push me and push me into a situation
I see.
Where I absolutely have to change it.
So interesting how that happens.
Yes, indeed.
Great. So in your process of coming from this car accident to perhaps mastery, mm-hmm. Do you feel like that process was a healing process, or do you feel like you were looking for a cure and never found it? Or I'm wondering how you could sort of use those terms in your own process.
In my own process, it was a huge healing process. Reiki brought me to a place where I had a sense of identity. And also combined with using other things such as acupuncture and yoga, it definitely helped. I mean, people now wouldn't know it, but at the time of the accident, one side of my face was slightly fallen and the left side of my body, I had no coordination at all. And I'm really convinced that having done so much Reiki and received so much Reiki that gave me back the balance, the sort of left-right brain balance or whatever. So for me, I felt that it was a huge healing on many levels, but also there is a strong aspect of cure in it as well.
I don't know, definition sometimes is very dry, but can you share with us your feeling of each word, your definition of each word?
Well, in my practice, one thing that I have learned is not to define things too much.
Right.
And I have really let go of outcomes. But I have worked in fairly clinical environments. And a lot of people have come to me in the past thinking that they wanted a cure. And actually what has happened has been a massive healing process where they have come back for several sessions of Reiki. And lots of things they didn't know were there have come up, and we've just worked with what was there. And usually, in my experience, what happens is that after this opening up, some of the symptoms start to disappear. So it's almost like the healing comes before the cure. That's one thing that I've noticed. But you can't put it in a box like that. I'd like to tell you a little story that might explain what I mean better.
Okay.
I call it the coffee bean story.
Okay.
And it brings to mind that phrase about let Reiki teach you. So this guy turned up in the clinic and I could see he was very tense, but he didn't give me much information about what he wanted. He had just come for Reiki. So as I gave him a treatment, in the room, there seemed to be this strong smell of coffee, and I just, where is that coming from? I didn't think much more of it on that occasion. But he came two or three times, and every time I put my hands on him, there would be this strong aroma of coffee, fresh coffee, and there wasn't a bar or anything near us, so it was puzzling. So around the third or fourth time, I sort of plucked up courage and said very casually, you know, it's strange, whenever I see you, whenever I put my hands on you, I just get this strong feeling of coffee and I can smell it. And he kind of had quite a strong reaction to that statement and, you know, of the, I don't believe it. And then he explained to me gradually that he had actually grown up on a coffee plantation. And during the time of his childhood, he'd had a really rough time. without going into the details, he'd suffered all forms of abuse. And from that, he came a few more times to see me, and he told me a few more bits of his story. And he told me that he had never wanted psychotherapy or counseling because it was just too scary to go back there. But he still came for Reiki, and gradually that smell, it wasn't there anymore. And then one day he walked in and said, "Oh, Tripuri, I hope you don't mind, but I won't be coming back. I've signed up for psychotherapy."
Wow.
Now, for me, that is a huge healing.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't do anything. You know, all I did was give him Reiki, and it just unfolded. But also, I became very aware during the time that I was with him that he had a lot of mental issues, including acute bouts of depression and migraines.
Mm-hmm.
But Reiki took him to a place where he was ready to face it.
Well, beautiful.
And the thing was this subtle hint from Reiki. The way that Reiki gave me a way to ask the right question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing. I know have known some people who are very, I can't remember what the real word is, but sort of, they have a lot of smells and odors. Mm-hmm. Then somehow these come up for them, and I don't notice it. Maybe I'm not a smell and odor person. I'm more of an emotional person.
I've had some experience of smell in meditation, but it's usually things like sandalwood or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
But this is the first time it has happened in Reiki, and certainly the most powerful one.
Wow,
and it was
so
there
beautiful.
For a purpose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. So what about a curing story then?
Oh, I have a lovely curing story.
Okay, a curing story.
This is a story about cancer.
Mm.
And one day, two people brought a lady to me. Her name was Jan. And she was really in not a good state. I mean, the clinic sort of had stairs in the room where I was working. And they were propping her up and brought her in. And she was very yellow, so I knew that there would be problems with the liver. And inside, I was quaking. I was thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know what to say here.
Right.
Because they were coming to me, this is kind of difficult to explain, but I had a fairly good reputation at that time. So they were almost coming to me as the last resort.
Right, well that happens quite often in people.
Yes, and you know, so I had my moments of hesitation wondering what I could say, and then inside me I kind of had a sense of, well, Reiki is always beneficial, and if she would like a treatment I'll give it to her. So they were asking me all the difficult questions, the friends, about what I could do to help. And I simply said, well, I can see that you're very weak, Jan. You've been through a tough time. Where are you in your treatment? Have you had chemo? And she explained, yes, it was the chemo that was making her so ill. And I said, well, Reiki can be really helpful for supporting
mm-hmm.
people through this process.
Right. Right.
And I would be very happy to give you treatments, but one treatment is not going to resolve everything. How do you feel about that? And she just looked at me and she gave me a beautiful smile and said, I've been working all my life. I have savings and my prognosis is not good. Let's do it. So I gave her a treatment that day, and then I arranged with her that I would come and see her at her home, which wasn't too far from mine. I said, I don't want you doing these stairs or any of this strenuous stuff. While you need it, I will come and I'll give you home visits. And for a week, I would like to give you treatment every day, and then we'll assess where we go from there. So that's exactly what I did. And she responded really well. And we decided that we'd keep this going. So for about a month, I treated her every day. And she was still weak, but she was definitely able to eat a little more. She was having one of the pauses that people have between rounds of chemo.
Right, right.
And, you know, she was doing okay, considering how ill she was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spoke to Krishni and sort of said, you know, what I would really like is, because I wasn't a master at that time, what I would really like is for Jan to be initiated so that she can self-treat when she's lying in bed. and, you know, as much self-treatment as she can bear to do. And then I could go and see her every 2 or 3 days and keep that rhythm going. And at first, Krishni was a bit reluctant because of Jan's health. And I said, well, I think she's well enough now to come in the car to you. Maybe you can decide then. So Krishni agreed to do that. And she initiated her into Reiki 1. And Jan started self-treating and integrated that with treatments with me. And she progressively got stronger and stronger. And then Krishni suggested to her that she started to do Qigong. She felt it was important for her to start moving her body again. So she started to do that. And everything was going well. And one day she came to see me. And she said, no, Tripuri, you know, it's great, but there's just one thing. I can't stand these migraines. I'm having such terrible migraine. I really can't bear it. And there were tears in her eyes. I can't explain how bad they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, I'll give you Reiki. I'll hold your head for a little longer, and we'll see what happens. So I gave her Reiki, and I held her head for about half an hour. And then instead of doing the full body treatment, I turned her over and started working towards the back of her head and on her shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And as I touched her shoulder, suddenly this bolt is the best word I can use, this electric shock bolt of pain went right up my arm, right into my shoulder. I was completely taken aback by it. It was an enormous release, and I'd experienced different forms of release from people, but nothing like this. But I remembered, I could hear Krishni in my head saying, keep your hands on her, because she was very strong about whenever the unexpected happens, just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept going and completed the treatment. I think we finished after another half hour. And she seemed more or less fine at the end of the treatment. And 2 days later, she called me and said, what have you done? And I'm thinking, oh gosh, what have I done?
Great.
And she said, I haven't had a headache since. And from that point, she started to make real progress. And she was great, and she was going out, and she decided to resign her job as a teacher, which she'd been hanging on to for a pension. That's the only reason she was hanging on to her sick leave, because she was almost due to get a pension.
Uh-huh.
And she was facing the fact that maybe she wouldn't be so strong. But then she said, no, I'm giving it all up. I'm just going to be free for as long as I've got. And she was an art teacher and a very good artist, and she started working again.
Wow.
Which is absolutely brilliant. And then after a while, you know, I didn't see so much of her. And she came and she said she'd had an assessment, and that the hospital had said there must be some mistake, because when they scanned her, they couldn't see what they were looking for. And so she said to them very sharply, if there was a mistake, why am I covered with radiotherapy burns? Anyway, I didn't see her much after that. She sent me a nice card. And about 18 months later, I bumped into a friend of hers. And so very cautiously, I inquired, how's Jan doing? And he said, oh, great, she's been giving art exhibitions. And that's the last I ever heard of her. So I'm not sure whether that was heal or cure, but she didn't actually go through a lot of mental or emotional processes. She just drank the Reiki like a sponge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So for you, and I think this is true for most everybody, cure is a little bit like letting go, or going through the process and coming out the other side without any residue of
yes.
the condition. And healing, you may come out with some, I mean, actually the what you're going for, the condition that you're going for, may actually not even change in the sense of a physical change, but
absolutely.
The changes inside might be put that into a very different context.
Yeah.
Yes? Is
yeah.
that kind of...
Yeah, absolutely, because as she got her, and thinking about Jan, as she got her energy back, as she got her sense of identity back, actually she really felt empowered to change her life. She had that kind of inner freedom.
Right. That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Great. Well, you're a great storyteller. So when in your treatment processes, and all these treatments, is there a story that stands out where Reiki didn't seem to be working, and actually at the end there was a kind of understanding about how that happened? I mean, mm-hmm. I just love these stories myself.
I think when you say that, the person who floated into my mind was a very dear friend of mine. He'd been a friend of mine for 30 years,
uh-huh.
and he died this year in February.
Mm.
I actually wrote an article about it in the Touch magazine.
Uh-huh.
He had cancer as well, and it was kind of different. I was giving him Reiki, and I absolutely knew that we weren't going down the road of cure. Whether he knew it or not, I'm not quite sure.
Uh-huh.
But I absolutely knew that this was his process of, let's say, a gentle exit.
Uh-huh.
And I got friends of mine at times to give him treatments, and some of my students. And there was absolutely no doubt that the Reiki supported him in his own journey.
Mm-hmm.
In January, we ran a workshop in London, and he came and joined us. And he was actually doing yoga with us. This is about 2.5 weeks before the end of his life.
Wow.
And he gave a talk. And he was talking about facing reality or death with equanimity. And he just said, I don't know what the prognosis is, but I'm just trying to live my life and enjoy every moment of it and be the best of myself.
Mm.
And then at the end, obviously he was in the hospice, he sent this really cheerful, beautiful text to all his friends saying, well, you know, I'm in my final place, I'm at the hospice, and I would really love to have people around me. And do come and see me and give me Reiki and whatever. And so I was with him up until the time that he died. I left just the night before he died because his sons were with him and I felt that that was their space.
Uh-huh.
And every now and then he would just raise a hand, which kind of went, a bit more Reiki, please. and then he would engage. You know, he ran an organization called Save Our World, which was a ecology movement, and he was still engaging on that last day about the website and what they were going to do. and, yeah, absolutely unstoppable, wonderful. So you can't see an example of success in brackets or cure or healing on one level, but on another level he knew that the Reiki was sustaining him,
uh-huh.
and that it was valuable to him, and to see his state of being in the last days of his life was a real privilege, because we all felt uplifted
uh-huh.
from being around him.
Wow, how inspiring.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, well, that's... I'd choose one of those. Oh, gosh, wonderful. And in your life, as you have gone through your teaching part mm-hmm. of your mastery, I know that you do teach quite a lot, mostly mm-hmm. in the UK?
Mostly in the UK. Always in the UK.
Always?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. A local girl.
A local girl.
Wow. Well, I just finished a whole series of interviews with masters who mostly travel everywhere, right? I mean, the traveling Reiki master is sort of what we have in mind, so it's nice to... have an interview with somebody who stayed at home, basically.
London's a big pond.
Yeah, it is. And how has that been for you, just staying at home and being there? I don't mean to discount it or make it seem boring, but I'm just wondering about the community, because my imagination is that if I had been able to stay in one place, that the community would deepen and deepen around me. And I never have had that kind of sustained experience.
Well, that's exactly what happened. I practiced Reiki for a number of years in London, and then I became a master in 99. I was incredibly blessed. I had students waiting for me to complete my training, so I started teaching almost immediately, and courses just kept happening. And I felt almost, sounds strange, but at times I was just thinking, how come all this is happening? Because people were asking all the time. And I had quite big classes, and I had already worked for some years in centres around London, so I never had a problem with venue, and I was able to organise for myself very easily. In 2005, I moved out of London to Norfolk, and I'm quite amazed, actually, that people still invite me back. And so I do still teach in London and a little bit in Norfolk, not as much as I used to, yeah. But when it comes, I'm always available.
Right, yeah. That's great. And in your working with your classes, do you feel that people come with the understanding that Reiki can participate in both healing and curing, and or do they...
When I was living in London, I felt that through my community, nearly all the students came to me through word of mouth. And most of those students had some understanding or a wish for Reiki, I think for self-empowerment or to deal with old issues. And they seemed to have some idea of what Reiki was about. And that community was very strong. We had regular sharing groups. I ran workshops and trainings for them. And they, you know, they are still a very strong community of Usushiki Ryoho. When I moved, it changed because other people were organizing my classes for me. And although the community held well, I think somehow the dynamic changed. Maybe people found my name on a website or they heard about me through other ways. And they would come because they had heard of Reiki rather than with their own particular idea of what they wanted. They'd heard of Reiki, maybe they'd had a Reiki treatment and they wanted to know more. And so they were a very different set of students. And sometimes I had to kind of approach the way that I taught it slightly differently.
Well, it's really inspiring to know that you can set up a Reiki practice and go for so long. And so you must have lots of stories of in your little basket there.
I have a few.
Yeah. So in this theme of Reiki and healing, do you have a few that you could, a few more that you could pull out for us? I know that people must love to hear stories.
Oh my goodness. I can tell a story which I hope wouldn't be too shocking in some ways, which is a very powerful story. It's a powerful story about non-judgment and just loving people for the sake of loving people.
Well, you've got my curiosity.
Again, in the early days, in the early 90s, an AIDS epidemic swept London. It was the beginning of the gay community in London. And at that time, there were also all sorts of other things going on. And somebody invited me or asked me to go to a squat in London and help a woman from New Zealand who at that time had a really serious problem. She was a heroin addict and had been for 17 years. And she was married to an artist who also dabbled in the drug culture, but he had contracted AIDS because he was bisexual. And things were really getting, you know, they were way out of their depth because both of them were so ill. she couldn't support him, and it was really complex. And someone persuaded me to go and meet Andrea. And so I went, and I went to their place, so I saw the whole situation. And I said, do you think I can help you? Do you want me to help you? You know what? And she actually turned out to be very different from what I had expected, and she was very strong. And she kind of said, well, Paul Barton, which is what she called her husband, he is really unwell, and I know I need to sort myself out to support him. So again, we made an arrangement, and she came to see me in a clinic nearby, and she came on a regular basis. And it was tough. Physically, it was really tough for her, going through her own process. And at a certain stage, she said, you know, Paul's in St. Thomas's, would you go and see him? He's really sick. We want to get him home to New Zealand so he can make peace with his parents. He hasn't seen them for years, and this is what he really wants. So I thought, well, I can try. And I went, and so the two of them, I would see them both regularly. But when I met Paul, he was in bed, he was covered with tattoos, he was a very angry man. And he used to let me get some of his anger. It was difficult. Uh-huh. It was difficult, to say the least.
And how did you handle that, just as a little aside? Because I think that, you know, in the healing process, anger often comes up.
Yeah.
Because
of course.
Because of course. Exactly. So how do you deal with
that?
I
think it was the of course. I understood that he was really frightened. Uh-huh. And that he felt, or that he knew there was no return. This was before all the sort of flash combination drugs had been worked out. In those days, you know, it was a pretty difficult situation to be in, to be told that you had AIDS.
Yes.
And he was angry, very angry. So it was that understanding of the, of course he's angry. And I would just hold his feet. And he used to rant at me and throw satanic verses at me because that book was out at the time. And I would just hold his feet. And then one day I kind of had a bit of a flash of how I could make him realize that I didn't hold opinions or judgments. My son Ram at that time was about 4 or 5 years old, and I took him with me to the hospital, into the ward, and I had Paul meet my son, and Ram sat on his knee, and then he realized that I didn't have prejudice or fear of his condition.
Uh-huh.
And that changed our whole relationship. And he allowed me to treat him, and we did get him well enough for the doctors to give him permission to fly home. And in his case, he rang me the day he was dying, and he told me, you know, everything had been great. He had got off the plane, and somebody was there to meet him off the plane, who had Reiki, who'd been an old friend, and in the meantime had got Reiki. And he'd made peace with his parents, and he was in a good place. And he actually said to me the words of a Vedic mantra. And that was his way of saying goodbye to me. But it was also his way of apologizing to me, because uh-huh. this is all the spiritual stuff he'd been throwing at me when I was treating him. So, you know, I just thought, wow, what a full circle.
Uh-huh.
Because he said it with real sincerity. And then I heard a day later that he'd actually passed. And meanwhile, I had Andrea.
Oh, yes.
And he had left a letter. He was an artist. And he had left a letter organizing for some of his paintings to be sold. And he'd put aside some of that money, which was given to me. And he said, I want you to look after Drea. I want you to get her off heroin. And I want you to teach her Reiki. So over a period of time, 2 or 3 years, that's what happened. And interestingly enough, when the time came to give her Reiki 2, she was a natural. She just got it, and she started sending to all her past situations, her pain, all of it. She just really got it. But she still had one big hurdle to cross. She'd got to the stage where she really wanted a child, and the doctors had said because she'd had hepatitis C, no way. And, you know, she said, what can I do about that? And I said, well, I can give you Reiki. You can send to your wish and to your dream. And for goodness sake, keep on with the health regime, because she was having acupuncture and she was having homeopathy and other treatments and taking milk thistle to support her liver. I said, you keep going. You don't give up. You keep going. And you may have to keep going for the rest of your life to stay well. And she sort of shot me a look. I said, well, you asked. And anyway, she did go back to New Zealand. She had a new partner. She was completely clean. She managed to break free of the methadone, which is actually tougher to get off than heroin.
That's amazing.
And she trained as a silversmith and started working creatively in that way. And from time to time, I would hear from her. And just this summer, she came back and she brought her 5-year-old daughter to meet me.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's also, I'm not sure which of those two falls between healing or curing, but it certainly shows transformation.
Uh-huh.
That nothing, I don't believe anything's impossible, because it depends on the individual.
Uh-huh.
And it depends on their story and their willingness,
uh-huh.
where they want to be uh-huh. in their journey.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, one of the things that really strikes me about this whole story is just the magnificent commitment to keep moving forward with these people, and that it isn't an instantaneous cure, because of course how could it be with all the different aspects of it all, but that she's just willing to keep every day moving and growing is wonderful.
Yeah, she's a very, very strong person.
Wow.
And, you know, people might wonder, well, how on earth did she fall into that way of life, those conditions? But actually, I've met a lot of very strong people who have a kind of need at some time in their life to really explore the dark side. I don't know why, but it happens.
Well, you know, for me, I think that there's... let's see. There's a part of it for me that it's like being strong like that is really a gift. And in some way, not knowing how to channel it, not knowing what to do with it, not knowing where to go with it, there's a part, I think, of all of us, including myself, and I say this from my own past experience, that I was really on the edge a lot of times. And only, I would say, my fate, my destiny, or somebody, some angel, I can say this now, but I wouldn't have 30 years ago, some angel plucked me up by the back of my collar, and put me in another place. Otherwise, I would have been very similar story to her. Mm-hmm. And I feel that as a person that has a lot of strong strength in various areas, that there's a wanting to be tested in some way,
mm-hmm.
you know. And also, as I said, if you're not taught how to work with your strength, then it seems like a disability rather than a gift.
Mm.
And so, you know, somehow you mitigate that. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. I don't know if that's Andrea's story, but it certainly, I've seen that a lot in different people.
Yeah.
Wow, what a story. Do you have another one?
Oh my goodness.
Probably a lot.
I have lots of different stories. I suppose I've got a current one,
okay.
Which again is about a lady who is very ill, and she's had several operations on her liver, And yeah, again, a difficult prognosis, but there's something about this lady. And I met her and she said, "Can you help me?" And again, I simply said, "I can give you Reiki. It will probably support you through your treatments with interferon and whatever. I can't give you any guaranteed outcomes. So why don't we try a few treatments and see how you feel about it?" So that's what we did. And it was just an amazing process. And with her, because her situation was that she had lost heart. She had kind of looked after her father through Alzheimer's, which had been a big strain. A lot of other difficult things had happened, and she'd kind of lost heart. She's in her early 60s. And so in the context of giving her Reiki, I also did some visualization work with her, and we did quite a lot of mental healing work. And I taught her, and she didn't know about any of this type of thing. It was all new to her. So I taught her some very simple affirmations and NLP processes to kind of bring her to a more positive state of mind.
Right.
I'm also a licensed flower essence practitioner, so I also made up some Australian bush flower remedies to act as a bridge between treatments, because she couldn't afford to come more than once a week, and I actually felt this was another person who could have done with Reiki every day for a while.
Right.
So I used these techniques and the flower essences as bridges between appointments, and then she would feedback to me a little bit about how she was feeling and how she could work with these things. And that seemed to be a very effective way. She had one setback where she overdid it. I was encouraging her to go out and about and see people and not lock herself away.
Right.
But she overdid it one day and got a chill, and that set her back a bit. And when she came to see me, we were back to square one. She was frightened. She thought she was getting sick again. But when I gave her Reiki, it was very apparent to me that what had happened is that she had simply got overtired and a bit of a chill. So we addressed that, and I gave her a few tips about how to look after herself. And the next time she came back and she said, "Oh, I feel so much better. I think I've just been panicking for nothing." And I said, "No, it's not for nothing. It's just that you have to learn a new way of being, how to look after yourself, and to eat the food that your body likes, and to take support and help."
Right.
And
right.
So anyway, she had recently to go to the hospital for blood tests, and she was very nervous. So I firmly gave her a bottle of Rescue Remedy and said, "Don't get yourself in a state when you start to panic. Take this. Take it with you right into the hospital. Doesn't matter if you take it every few minutes. Just take it and you'll be fine." I couldn't teach her, I couldn't tell her to self-treat, because we haven't got to the stage. She doesn't have Reiki 1. So anyway, she went, and she came back, and she said the results were really, really good, and that, you know, they're not quite sure. They were expecting to see me in a poor condition, and they were very surprised to see me so well. So at that stage, I said to her, "Well, you know, what we could do is, if you feel like it, I could teach you Reiki so you can self-treat." So she's now thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways that you can support people as well with Reiki when they don't have training, or they only come sporadically for treatments.
Yeah, you know, I always hold with this theory that not everybody's path is Reiki either. Mm. And sometimes it's good for people, especially people in these what we might call dire circumstances, to come for treatment, because I feel that, and I don't know how you feel about this, so I'd love to have your opinion, I feel that unless people get to a certain stage of their own health, they to be treated is all they can do.
Absolutely.
And then once they reach a certain stage, then thinking about embarking on, you know, a journey like being initiated into Reiki is possible.
Yes, I think that's true. I think there's a sort of stage where Reiki kind of tells me when it's the right time to ask. I get a feeling that actually this person is strong enough to take some responsibility for their state. And I approach it gently, and some people just are immediately, yes, I would love to do that. And others, you know, need a little time to think it over. And once I've raised the question and told them that there's the possibility, I leave it to them.
Mm-hmm. And are there any people who don't ever take you up on it?
Yeah, quite a few. I have two or three clients who've been coming to me for years, and they just love to receive Reiki.
I'm one of those people. I do self-treat, but I'd love to have a practitioner close by where I can just call up and say, I'll give you some bucks if you'll give me some Reiki.
Yeah, I think that it's really nice as well, because that relationship, that Reiki relationship is very comfortable, and sometimes I almost feel like, oh, actually, did I get the treatment or did they? Because there's no agenda, there's no I want you to fix me, there's no I want to learn, or I just love to have Reiki.
Uh-huh.
It's as simple as that. It makes me feel good.
Uh-huh. So I know you don't like putting things in little boxes, but what about these people who just, as we would say, in quotation marks, just come to have a treatment? Like, what's that about?
Well, I can talk to you about Mr. Haravan.
Okay.
Mr. Haravan's 84, and he climbs three flights of stairs in the little treatment room where I work in Norwich, and it's amazing. What's it about for him, I think, is that although he hasn't put it into so many words for me, he's an elderly gentleman who has always been very active. He used to play table tennis brilliantly. He still plays pitch and putt, which is a simplified form of golf. And he has a wife who he looks after, and a daughter with learning disabilities who he also supports. And I think he recognizes that the Reiki helps him hold a place where he can still do all those things.
Beautiful.
But we never discuss it in detail. He just gossips to me about what's going on and tells me things. And every now and then he'll say, oh, my shoulder's a bit stiff, can you have a go there? Or, you know, I went to the osteopath, my hip's a bit sore. But he never takes it beyond that level. But my sense is, he's been coming to me now for 3 or 4 years, and my sense is that he really knows that the Reiki is kind of like having a drink of water energetically, you know, that it just puts him in a place where he can keep going.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Well, the benefits of Reiki certainly are clear in your stories, and I want to thank you very much for sharing them.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And also, just wonderful to talk with someone who has had a dedicated Reiki practice all these years and is right out there for the community. That's a wonderful service.
Well, you know, it's Reiki, isn't it? We
yes,
go
it
where
is.
We go where it takes us.
Yes, it does. We do. Well, thank you very much, Tripuri.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Yeah, and thank you, listeners. We'll be back again next week. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.